And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 10th of September, 2013. It was on this day, 2008, engineers flipped the switch to turn on the world's largest machine, the Large Hadron Collider. Very first time. A ring 27 kilometers around, that's about 17 miles, buried deep below the Alps in Switzerland and France, housing a series of superconducting magnets in a variety of sizes, magnets that focus and direct beams of particles around the ring. And these magnets are so powerful, they have to be kept chilled to a temperature of minus 271 degrees Celsius, even colder than outer space. Two particle beams, no thicker than a human hair, make their way around the collider in opposite directions. The magnetic fields coax the beams to go faster and faster until they approach the speed of light, and then the two beams smash into each other in front of a particle detector, like shooting two needles at each other from a distance of 10 kilometers and trying to get them to meet each other exactly in the middle. The particles break up into subparticles, which exist for just a fraction of a second before they stick together or they disappear. And by studying the way the subparticles behave in that split second, particle physicists hope they can get a glimpse of what happened during the Big Bang. When it's running at peak speed, the LHC can produce as many as 550 million collisions per second. The Large Hadron Collider was shut down this past February so it could undergo an upgrade. And when it reopens in 2015, scientists will use it to study things like dark matter, dark energy, and supersymmetry. It's the birthday of one of the best-selling poets in America, Mary Oliver, born Maple Heights, Ohio, outside of Cleveland, 1935. Dropped out of college, made a pilgrimage to the estate in upstate New York where Edna St. Vincent Millay had lived. And though Millay had been dead for a while, her sister Norma still lived there, and she took Mary Oliver in. And it was there on Edna St. Vincent Millay's estate that Mary Oliver met Molly Malone Cook, who'd come to pay a visit, too. Mary Oliver and Molly Cook fell in love. They moved to Provincetown, Massachusetts. Cook became Oliver's literary agent. And after she died in 2005, Mary Oliver published a collection entitled Thirst, Poems About Her Grief. And it's the birthday of the biologist and science historian Stephen Jay Gould, born in Queens, New York, 1941, known for his essays on natural history and for explaining complicated scientific theories in a way that most people can understand them. In books such as The Flamingo's Smile, Bully for Brontosaurus. Here's a poem for today by John Updike, entitled Thunderstorm in Dorset, Vermont. It needs green hills to host a thunderstorm. This grumbling giant needs a place to hide and break his kindling into splinters, one stick at a time, and then in bundles, compacted threats that issue forth from where an oily darkness reigns beyond the ridge. The sizzle in our brains is overruled by such triumphant voltage overload. We witness vast concussions. Something falls down sets of stairs, the bottom step of which cracks open wide enough to show a strip of vein of naked light. All goes soft. The rain unfurls in supple gusts. The leaves flash pale, then limply steep themselves in green. A poem by John Updike, Thunderstorm in Dorset, Vermont, from his collection Endpoint, published by Alfred A. Knopf, and used by permission here on The Writer's Almanac, produced by Joy Biles, with assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Garrison Keillor on the Writer's Almanac here on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. Also online at jeffexchange.org, and you can find us on Facebook and Twitter as well. Got a little note to give you here. Jefferson Public Radio and the JPR Foundation invite listeners and members from Humboldt County and surrounding areas to join us for a public reception on Friday evening, September 20th at 7 at the Eureka Theater in Eureka. You'll have an opportunity to learn about current and future JPR activities, ask questions of JPR staff and the JPR Foundation Board of Directors. That is Friday evening, September 20th at 7 at the Eureka Theater. If you'd like more information about this public meeting, call us at 541-552-6301. Oops, I should have done that sooner because now I have to give the other phone numbers to tell you how to reach us on the air here at the Jefferson Exchange. And those are 800-838-3760 anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782 or by email jx@jeffnet.org. Many entities are involved in preserving our region's history. It's a pretty rich history, but the region is not as rich financially. Take Wairika, for example. It is the county seat of Siskiyou County, but not a place with a lot of people or a lot of money. Yet there is still that desire to make sure that key portions of Wairika's past are preserved, and that is the job for the Wairika Historic Preservation Corporation, of which Donald East is the president and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Donald, welcome.
Welcome. Good morning. How are you today?
I'm good. Good to have you here. Let's talk about the YHPC, how long the Wairika Historic Preservation Corporation has existed.
Yeah, it started back in 1972 and has existed pretty much ever since.
And what was the mission when it started? What got things going?
Well, it's interesting. The original organization was a political organization. And what they did was come together to begin to make the historic district that is in the historic area of downtown Wairika. And so that was one of their beginning functions and one of the things they really tried to get going.
And what is that historic district considered? What are the boundaries of it? How big?
Well, if you were to come to Wairika and you were come off the middle overpass...
It's the central Wairika exit?
Yeah, Wairika exit in the middle. And you would drive right into Old Town. And essentially, there's a couple of main areas. If you just drove up through Minor Street, that's the old commercial district where, you know, it almost looks like driving into a western town, which is pretty fun. And then there's also, from that direction, there's a Third Street that would head back north that goes through the section of some of the really beautiful Victorians that have been restored over the years. And it also includes the building that Wairika Preservation is currently housed in, which is the which was the Episcopal Church until about 2.5 years ago. Wairika Preservation now owns and maintains that property.
And how did the Episcopal Church come into the hands of Wairika Preservation?
Well, actually, the property, the church itself... closed down. They just didn't have a membership anymore. Unfortunately, that's, as you probably know, has happened to a number of organizations in our country. And in the process, they were looking for what would happen with the property. The church is really very interesting. It was built in 1880. It was built by a ship architect. So the original interior sort of looks like a giant up-down ship. In fact, one of the fun things... You may be aware of it. Ships are built to be flexible. And if you're in the building during a good wind outside, it creaks and sounds like you're in an old ship out at sea.
Huh. Yeah, they have to be flexible because they'll break apart at sea otherwise.
Yeah, right.
All right. So for the folks who don't know Wairika very well and have to work in their minds to differentiate it from Eureka, which, of course, is a long way away.
Yeah.
Why is Wairika there, particularly since the main line of the railroad went through Montague off to the east?
Yeah, well, Wairika is kind of interesting. It was originally a gold strike. In fact, one of the things that a lot of people don't know is there was more gold taken out of the Wairika area than was taken out of the Sierras. In fact, it was the richest strike until the strike happened in Alaska. And so that's why it started. Gold was struck here, and then, of course, you know, slowly a town built up around it. And it also became significant because it was the main place between San Francisco and Jefferson. Portland, between Portland And so that's a long area, and it was the stopping place, and that caused it to grow.
All right. So Wairika just ended up plopped down there. And, of course, Interstate 5 goes through there now, which makes it somewhat more important than the railroad going through Montague. How much of Wairika's past is already preserved or at least still standing? I mean, it looks, as you zip past on 5 and aren't looking closely, like it's a fairly modern place with gas stations and a JCPenney and things like that.
Yeah, that's especially if you're coming in from the south to Wairika, because the southern part of the town has, JCPenney's, it has Walmart and other kinds of things, where the center turnoff, which would be the second one you would come to from the south, is what turns into what was the original town that was established.
All right, so the Wairika Historic Preservation Corporation, it's unusual to have corporation tacked on the end of any sort of historic preservation entity. Why in this case?
Well, I think part of it, like I said in the beginning, it was a corporation because it was a political nonprofit, and they felt it was really important to go through that process and be involved in that in order to create the historic district. They did a number of things back in the beginning. They helped restore the Carnegie Library building, which is at the end of our historic town. They provided signs. They helped fund the Randolph Collier statue that's by our county courthouse. And you may know that Randolph Collier was a senator from Wairika, and he became known as the father of the California roads in California. And part of that, I think, is the reason why I-5 goes right through Wairika.
Oh, instead of going off to Montague as the railroad did?
Yes, right.
Got it. So is it somewhat difficult, Donald East, to achieve goals toward historic preservation given the small size of Wairika and not a great amount of money floating around, I would think?
Well, yes, and I think, you know, that's part of the problem that all of small-town America has these days is the money item. But, you know, we are in an amazing community here. My wife and I are both involved in Wairika Preservation, and when we first had the opportunity to take over the property that was the church, you know, we kind of thought, oh, what are we getting into? I'm sure you can relate to that, you know.
It's like getting into a fixer-upper.
Yeah, right, right. But, you know, it's this community. This community has been such a huge support with donations and support. One of the things that we do is we run the facility that we have now as a nonprofit community center. The old Sunday school rooms, and we also have a rectory house that's connected to it, have been turned into artist studios for local artists and musicians, which are rented all the time to that. We also do a lot of musical performances throughout the year. In fact, in the last 2 years, we've had 22 musical events that have taken place in our facility. Everything from high classic music to belly dancing and everything in between. So, you know, the thing that's made it really work is just an amazing support by the whole community, money-wise as well as volunteers.
We're talking to Donald East here on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the president of the Wairika Historic Preservation Corporation, or as they prefer to call themselves, Wairika Preservation for shorthand. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the issues of preserving history in a small town. Join us at 800-838-3760 anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, it's 541-552-6782 by email jx@jeffnet.org. How much fixing up did the old Episcopal Church take over the past couple of years?
Yeah, okay, well, that's a pretty interesting question. You know, one of the things, as the church itself sort of dwindled down and its membership got older, it got kind of hard to take care of things. Now, one of the things they had done before we came in is they had the exterior of the church completely repainted, and it was a beautiful job. The big thing that was needed was the roof. The roof that was on the church was, I believe the date was around 1963 when it was last done, and it was shakes, which, you know, aren't the best kind of roof anymore. And in the steeple itself, which was really interesting, there were five holes that were big enough for owls to get into the steeple. In fact, when I first went up to inspect that part, I hope this doesn't bother anybody, but I discovered 17 pigeon skeletons. So it was, you know, we had a number of things that we had to do.
So the pigeon skeletons had been owl food at some point?
That's what I kind of think, yeah. And I'm evidently the pigeons didn't get the idea.
There's a little Yreka history for you.
Yeah.
So, for example, when you're remodeling or at least fixing up or doing restoration on a church, so first of all, you're trying to preserve character, but you're also trying to make it useful to yourself. And so there must be some compromises that have to be made and then some guidelines within law and grant applications and things like that need to be followed.
Well, very much so. In fact, just since you mentioned the grant thing, we are currently in the process of changing from a political organization to a 501c3 charitable organization, because by doing so, then that makes us more available for grants and other kinds of things where it wasn't that way in the past. And as far as restoration goes, being in a historic district, I'm not sure if you're aware, but usually the cities who are involved with that, they have some pretty particular rules that have been set up. One of the main ones is the exterior of the buildings should remain very close to original. Our city even has a selection of historic colors, and so if you were going to paint the building or do something, you know, you would look at that particular set of colors and then come up with a combination that fit within that framework.
So hot pink or neon blue, not likely to show up on the historic buildings.
Not like the painted ladies in San Francisco. That's correct.
Right. So, and then how difficult is it to find artisans who can do some of the work you need? I would think when you're talking about the steeple on the Episcopal Church, I mean, a steeplejack or somebody who's used to working in high places without a lot of support below might be hard to come by in Siskiyou County.
Well, you know, it's interesting. One of the things I found about Siskiyou County, I originally lived in the San Francisco Bay Area, then later in Central California. There's been one of those interesting things that I think that's taking place in Yreka. It's becoming one of those places where lots of people are moving to that have amazing talents and abilities, and they're coming here because they just want to be in the Northwest. And as far as our roof went, there's an amazing builder who had all the right equipment. In fact, it was really interesting to watch these guys. Our roof is a 14 and 12. I don't know if you know what that means, but a 45-degree angle roof would be a 12 and 12.
Okay. Oh, sure. It rises 12 inches and 12 inches.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, 12 and 17 is considerably steeper. Well, these guys have been with this group for many years. They're very skilled, and they looked like rock climbers, mm-hmm. and they just scampered around the roof and swung back and forth. In fact, it became an entertainment feature in town while they were doing the roof. So sort of like the old thing where people say in a small town, you know, everybody comes out to watch the milk truck come in.
Right. So I need to understand, though, Donald, the historic district in Yreka does not have the same, it's not national historic landmark status like downtown Jacksonville, for example, on the Oregon side?
Yeah, well, there's different classifications, and we have, you know, if a building itself is in the register, it has to be go through a different process. And what we are is historic area. In other words, the town collectively that's an old town is the historic preservation site rather than any particular building.
Okay, and so, you know, if you let's talk about a wish list here. If you had unlimited resources at Yreka Preservation, what would you be doing? What's the next thing you'd move on to?
Well, one of the things that we're looking at a couple of things. Number one, we have a number of things that still need to be done to our building. One of them, the area that's a Sunday school area, was a cement block building that was built, I think, in like the mid-60s. And architecturally, it just doesn't fit with the rest of the building. So it would be really nice to get it painted, new roof put on, and make it, you know, fit more with the church design and that kind of thing. And like many old buildings, there's electrical challenges. Have you ever dealt with any old buildings yourself?
Oh, yeah, knob and tube wiring and stuff like that, sure.
Oh, yeah. You know, and of course, building codes in the turn of the century were considerably different than they are now.
You can find all kinds of things when you open up walls, I find. What was that insulation? You know, you're just never quite sure what you'll find.
Oh, I know. You know, well, in fact, you probably run into this, too. Many of the old buildings were insulated with a newspaper.
Uh-huh.
Ours isn't, but they were. Now, one of the other interesting things about the basic church facility is in 1963, 61 or 63, my numbers are slipping on me this morning, there was a really horrible fire that struck the church and blew out several of the original stained glass windows, completely scored the inside of the church. In fact, insurance-wide, it was considered a loss. But since it had been such a historic building, people got together, and what they did was put a new interior surface on the building, which is really quite beautiful today. And in the process, they insulated the building, because originally it was just a single wall board and bat building. And the other thing that was interesting, the original windows were not stained glass, but they were oiled paper, if you can imagine that.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never seen it, but that's, you know, what the history says. It's pretty interesting.
So you had a fundraiser for Yreka Preservation over the weekend, I understand. How'd that go?
It went very well. It was really kind of fun. One of the other things that we've done, we have a couple of music groups that are local that use the facility for their practices during the week. And one of them is the Siskiyou, Dixieland Band. There we go. And the fellow that runs it has also put together a big band. Clarence has just done an amazing thing locally. Again, you talk about volunteers and the kinds of things that they're doing in this community. But so for access and use of the building, they put together a fundraiser for us, and they had music, and we had a really wonderful dinner that was prepared by Carolyn Brask, who is a retired chef that works with us and prepared just phenomenal meal, and everybody had a wonderful time. It was a great success.
All right, and so we'll hear more down the road, I'm sure, about the future successes of the Yreka Historic Preservation Corporation. Are you going to drop the corporation from the name as you become a 501c3?
We're just going to call it Yreka Preservation. I think in the beginning I heard your introduction and you kind of stumbled over the word Yreka.
It happens.
Well, Yreka Historic Preservation Corporation is even worse.
Right, okay, yrekapreservation.org. Thank you so much for joining us, Donald East.
Well, thank you, and it's been a joy talking with you.
All right, take care.
Bye.